The Radio Guild offers this evening the third successive play by Ranald R. MacDougall. The last 2 weeks, Mr. MacDougall has given us new plays, never heard before. But for tonight, he has persuaded us to broadcast again a little something which he turned out in the fall of 1938, and which, in a fit of dissatisfaction, he perpetuated in a revised form later in the same year. It is called The Ineffable Essence of Nothing. The play proved most successful in 1938, and we've had many requests for its repetition. So here we go with Ranald MacDougall's fantasy for radio, The Ineffable Essence of Nothing.
What in the name of... How very peculiar. Oh, stop a minute, Pendennis.
Oh, yes, sir.
That shop there, the antique shop. You ever seen it before?
No, sir. Can't say I have.
Nor can I. Strange. That sign in the window. How does that read to you?
It says the ineffable essence of nothing.
Now, what in the topsy-turvy world does that mean?
Don't know, sir.
The ineffable essence of nothing. That means nothing. Nothing at all. Now, how the deuce can a man sell nothing and make a living at it?
Don't know, sir.
Well, I'm going to find out. Oh, you can drive on home, Pendennis. Tell Mrs. Castle that I'll be there in plenty of time for dinner.
Oh, very well, sir.
The ineffable essence of nothing.
And with this beginning, the National Broadcasting Company presents the second version of an unusual play, rewritten for this occasion by Ranald R. MacDougall. The play, a fantasy, is called The Ineffable Essence of Nothing, and refers, as you know, to the sign that Mr. Castle saw in the window of a mysterious antique shop. But now, let's return to our story, and to Mr. Castle, who is still standing where we left him.
An odd-looking little place. I don't recall ever having seen it before. That sign. Strange, but it seems vaguely familiar. It seems a trifle absurd. The ineffable essence of nothing. I wonder what it really is. Well, there's one sure way of finding out. That's by going in.
Ah, good afternoon, Mr. Castle. I've been expecting you. You're delightfully prompt.
How do you know my name?
Oh, I know a great many people and consequently a great many names.
Yes, but it's strange that you should know mine. I've never been in your shop before.
Quite true. Nevertheless, you're one of my best customers.
But I don't understand. Oh, perhaps you have a shop elsewhere in the city.
No. As a matter of fact, I have no shop at all.
Oh, well, come now, old fellow. What do you call this if it isn't a shop?
Do you often travel on this street, Mr. Castle?
Yes. Yes, I do. Why?
Have you ever seen this shop before?
No, I can't say that I have.
Nor can anyone say that they have, Mr. Castle. This shop does not exist.
What?
Merely a product of my imagination.
Well, you're to be congratulated on the vividness of your imagination. I'd have sworn that all these beautiful antiques were real. This lamp, for instance, and that rug and the mirror over there.
Yes, yes, the lamp was created by me for a young man named Aladdin. You may have heard of him.
Aladdin's lamp?
Yes. The rug is the well-known flying carpet.
What?
And the mirror was made by me for a young girl named Alice. Through the looking glass, if you remember.
Well, do you really mean to say that... Oh, it's impossible.
Oh, nothing is impossible, Mr. Castle. Incidentally, it was I who coined that phrase, nothing is impossible.
It's become a trifle overused.
Yes, I'm afraid so, but it's as true as it ever was.
Now, I still don't understand you. You say that I'm a customer of yours, but I don't remember ever having seen you before.
You never have, Mr. Castle.
Then what have I ever bought from you, Mr.... What did you say was your name?
I didn't say, but it happens to be Mew. The ineffable essence of nothing, sole proprietor, Mr. Mew.
Hmm. If you don't mind, I'll call you just Mr. Mew.
I don't mind.
Thank you. Now, Mr. Mew, what have I ever bought from you?
The ineffable essence of nothing.
What the devil is that?
Dreams, Mr. Castle. Long dreams, short dreams, and dreams of all description.
You're the first insane shopkeeper I've ever had the pleasure to be dazzled by.
Oh, Mr. Castle, I can see that you do not believe that I sell dreams.
Well, Mr. Mew, perhaps if you were to give me a slight sample.
Very well. Close your eyes. Now, what do you see?
I see the most radiant, the most fascinating, the most ravishing.
Yes, yes, she is beautiful, isn't she? One of my best dream girls. I only use her in the most difficult cases.
But all this is uncanny. It just can't happen. I must be dreaming.
Oh, no, I never give dreams away free of charge. And if you were dreaming, I'd surely know it.
Then it's some form of hypnosis. It must be.
You still do not believe me. Very well, then. If you'll allow me to examine my ledgers, I'll tell you some of the dreams I've sold you. May I?
By all means.
Castle. Ah, here we are. Ackroyd Castle. Now, let's see. When you were 17, you dreamed of being the king of a South Sea island, 43 hours, 25 minutes, no charge for native girls.
A very commonplace dream, Mr. Mew.
Not at all.
Now, just what do you mean by that?
Well, I will admit that such a dream is not unusual in a lad of 17 years, but your particular dream combined all the more popular aspects of Robinson Crusoe and a Turkish harem. Yes, very ornate it was. I don't mind telling you, Mr. Castle, that was some order you put in. It taxed even my skill at fashioning dreams.
What was the name of that island?
It had no name. Dreams never do. Oh, I see you're trying to catch me out.
Oh, well, as you said yourself, everyone dreams of a desert island at one time or another. No, Mr. Mew, I'm afraid you'll have to give me a more concrete example than that.
Very well, then. When you were 22, you dreamed of marrying a motion picture star. 17 hours, 10 minutes.
Oh, come now, Mr. Mew.
Well, last night, you dreamed of taking a life. Murder, Mr. Castle. That's why you came in here today, to buy one of the guns you saw in my window, just under the sign which caught your attention. I put out a tray of guns to lure you in.
Now I do believe you, Mr. Mew.
Ah, you're a hard man to convince.
Now that you have convinced me?
I'd like to sell you a dream, another dream, to take the place of the one you had last night.
I don't want any more.
I'll give you a bargain price, Mr. Castle.
No.
I won't charge you any time at all. And when you're through with the dream I offer you, you'll be in your car as it was 15 minutes ago.
Well, what is it? Some sort of fairy tale, I suppose. Something on the style of Aladdin's lamp, no doubt.
No, I cannot give you the lamp, but I can offer you a doorway.
A doorway? What in the world would I do with a doorway?
You could walk through it.
What's so wonderful about that?
Oh, doorways are the most delightful things in the world, Mr. Castle. You never know what is on the other side of them until you go through. Take that doorway in the back there, for instance. That door with the curious carvings and metal handle. On the other side, there might be almost anything. A great adventure, a beautiful romance, and possibly death. Will you step through that doorway?
I have very little to lose. And I trust you, Mr. Mew.
Oh, it isn't a matter of trust. I can't guarantee that what you find on the other side will be altogether pleasant.
Then why should I go through?
Why not? Are you afraid?
Supposing I am.
Well, I would not think badly of you for that, Mr. Castle. But I give you my solemn promise that death is not waiting for you on the other side of that door.
There are worse things than death, they say.
That may be, but fortunately I know nothing of the things that are worse than death. Therefore, you see, I'm not in a position to include them in the dreams that I sell.
Well, I...
Why don't you step through that door, Mr. Castle?
Very well, Mr. Mew. I will.
Goodbye, Mr. Castle.
What do you mean?
After you step through the door, you'll never see me again. But before you go, let me give you this advice. When dreams are easily recognized as being dreams, all is well. But when they become too real, it is time to stop sleeping.
And what does that mean?
Step through the door and find out.
That's Ekroyd the gambler. He's the most cunning, the most dishonest outcast in Cairo. Everybody knows him.
You said he was an outcast?
Yeah, he'd done something back home. About 10 years ago it was. Been here ever since. Drinks nothing but scotch.
And very good scotch it is.
Ain't it the truth? He makes me order it for him every month.
What did he do back home?
It ain't healthy to ask so many questions, young'un.
But I'm interested.
Then supposing you ask him what he done back home.
Very well, I will.
Don't be a fool, young'un.
Oh, Mr. Ekroyd.
What do you want?
My name is Castle.
I heard you. Sit down, Mr. Castle. And don't talk for a minute.
I just came over to thank you.
Shut up.
Now, look here, you...
My dear Mr. Castle... I've been known to be distinctly unpleasant with people who talk when I want them to be quiet. Now, shut up. I'm trying to think. Where do you come from?
London.
When?
Today.
How?
Well, I...
Don't lie. You didn't come by boat. There hasn't been any for a week. How did you get here?
I came through the shop of Mr. Mew.
What are you talking about?
That door over there. On the other side is an antique shop.
Ah, you're mad. There's nothing on the other side of that door but a particularly filthy street of Cairo. You're an out-and-out liar, Mr. Castle.
Now, look here, Mr. Ekroyd. Whether I'm in Cairo or London, you can't talk to me like that.
You seem to overlook the fact that I am talking to you like that.
And I say, why are you so frightened by me?
Am I frightened by you?
Yes. It shows in your eyes. And you were disturbed when you heard my name was Castle. What does the name of Castle mean to you? Who are you?
Offhand, I should say it was you who should offer explanations. Well, who are you?
I've already told you. My name is Ekroyd Castle.
Ekroyd Castle.
So I've said.
Mr. Castle, listen carefully. I cannot stress too greatly the importance of your doing as I say. Believe me, I do not exaggerate when I say that your very life hinges on your actions in the next few minutes. Do you understand?
Well, what is it you want me to do?
I have a suite of rooms upstairs. I want you to get up quietly and walk up those stairs over there. I'll be right behind you. So, be careful.
Why exactly are you interested in me?
Up those stairs, Mr. Castle. And now, into that room, Mr. Castle.
The door is closed.
Well?
I'd feel more comfortable if you opened it. I don't trust doorways any too much, Mr. Ekroyd.
Very well.
Now, Mr. Ekroyd, would you mind explaining what this is all about?
Mr. Castle, there's something very strange about you. As a matter of fact, you're a picture. A picture of me. Your voice and your face are like mine were 10 years ago. And your name is Castle.
What do you mean?
Back in 1940...
This is 1940.
This is 1951. What are you talking about?
Oh,
Oh, yes, I'm beginning to see it. I beg your pardon. Sometimes I get confused.
I've noticed that.
You were saying...
I was saying back in 1940, my name was Castle. Ackroyd Castle.
What?
Yes. I had to leave England hurriedly. I got into a little trouble.
Unless I'm very much mistaken, Mr. Ackroyd, you committed murder.
You just condemned yourself to death, Mr. Castle. For 10 years, I have lived in haste and in fear, waiting for a tap on the shoulder which never came until today. During those 10 years, I have had the opportunity to promise myself that I would not be taken easily. You understand me?
Yes, you mean you'll kill me first. But that doesn't cause me any particular concern at the moment.
No?
No. Mr. Ackroyd, would it alarm you if I were to tell you that you... don't exist.
I suppose that is why you pity me.
You don't believe me any more than I believe Mr. Newman.
Oh, come, mister. Whatever your real name is, why all this pretense? What do you hope to gain by it?
Nothing. The ineffable essence of nothing, in fact.
The ineffable essence of nothing? What the devil is that?
That, my dear Mr. Ackroyd, is you. You're nothing. Less than nothing, as a matter of fact. A zero is nothing, but at least it has tangibility and a basis in truth. You have tangibility, but your only basis in truth is the fact that I might have committed a murder had I never seen you.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It isn't important that you know. What I'm trying to tell you is that I'm not of the police. My only interest in you is the interest one has in seeing around a corner. I am you, Mr. Ackroyd, but you're not I, and you never will be. I'll take good care of that.
Stop talking in senseless riddles. Who are you, and what do you want of me?
My name, as I told you, is Ackroyd Castle.
I am Ackroyd Castle.
We are both Ackroyd Castle.
What?
I am he as he is, and you are he as he would be. I'm real, but you are only the shadow of coming events. No, you will never exist, Mr. Ackroyd. That's why I pity you.
You're mad. Such things do not happen. You're trying to make
Ackroyd,
me...
Ackroyd! Ackroyd! What's the matter, Ackroyd? Is it the police?
Stay out of this, Olga. It doesn't concern you.
But I heard quarreling. Who's that man?
What's the matter with you? You act as though you'd seen a ghost.
Perhaps I have. That man, he is. Oh, it can't be.
Can't be what? Am I the only sane person in this room?
That man is the person I fell in love with 10 years ago.
What's the matter with you, you fool? You fell in love with me.
Look at him, Ackroyd. Can't you see? Who is this man who looks so much like you?
He says he is me.
And so I am.
Mr. Castle, you're beginning to bore me. I suppose you know I must, let us say, dispose of you.
By all means, let us say, dispose of me.
Aren't you a trifle frightened at the prospect?
Should I be?
You're either a very brave man or a stupid fool. Whichever you are, it doesn't change my plans for you.
You probably won't understand, Mr. Ackroyd, but nothing you can say or do will frighten me.
Really? And why not?
Because you're merely a product of the very active imagination of a certain Mr. Mew.
Oh, we're back again to that, are we?
Yes. This time I'm going to prove that you and I are the same person.
Very well. You have my permission. Prove to me that you and I are the same person.
When we were 15, Mr. Ackroyd, you and I, we tried to enlist in the army and gave our ages 18 using the name of... Let me see, I think it was the headmaster at school. Tarbell? That's it, Tarbell.
How did you know? I never told...
You never told anyone. Nor did you ever tell anyone about the time you fell and cut your knee while out of bounds. You didn't even tell your mother, but you still have that scar on your knee, Mr. Ackroyd.
Olga, get out of here.
You're beginning to be frightened, aren't you, Mr. Ackroyd? You're beginning to realize that you and I are the same person, 10 years apart.
It can't be. I am real. Look, I have blood and flesh as strong as yours.
But I have the soul. No, Mr. Ackroyd, you don't exist and you never will. I'll take good care of that.
I don't know what you're talking about. I won't listen to any more. You're trying to drive me mad.
No, I'm merely trying to explain to you.
Be quiet. Be quiet. If you say any more, I'll kill you.
You can't even do that. You're a poor, harmless shadow.
Shadow, am I? Harmless, am I? We'll see.
Ackroyd, don't shoot. The police.
Damn the police.
So you see, Mr. Ackroyd, by testing my reality, you've destroyed yourself. Just as a soap bubble bursts when it touches a brick wall.
Don't. understand. Aimed for you. How did I hit myself?
I don't know exactly. Perhaps it's because you are less real than I am. Or perhaps the dream is beginning to bore Mr. Mew and he wishes to end it quickly. Well, it's done with now.
Oh, Smag, aren't you? Well, not sorry. Not sorry for anything. I've had a certain amount of fun. Don't regret it. Except you, Olga.
I did love you once, Eckhart.
A long time ago, wasn't it? That day gave you a lift in car. Didn't know it would end like this. Strange way for a ride to end. Oh, business. Strange.
He's dead.
Yes. You know, I can't help feeling a trifle proud of the way I would have died. It's a very strange thought. We two were one, and yet he was a stranger to me. He lived 10 years of my life that I shall never live. Queer. How did you come to meet him, Olga?
It was early summer. My car broke down on the road. He was passing by in his limousine. He was wealthy, you understand, and he stopped to give me a lift. That was the first time I met him.
It's all very odd. I don't see.
Somebody heard the shot. They think we killed him.
Well, I suppose we should get out of here for your sake, Olga. Doesn't matter a great deal to me. My life in Cairo is nearly done, I'm afraid.
No time to talk and pray. You must get away from here. Come, I tell you, this way, quickly.
Where are we going?
Across the roof and down through one of the buildings onto another street. It's our only chance.
Wouldn't it be simpler if I stayed behind and let them catch me? They can do no harm. And...
Somewhere along here, there's a door. A small wooden door with a brass handle. Somewhere in this passage. Hurry, we must find it. Oh, it's so dark. Feel along that wall. Hurry, please. It's our only way to the street.
Doorways certainly are playing an important part in my life today.
Here it is. I found it. It is dark. I can't open it. Got to open.
Perhaps it's locked.
It can't be locked. It mustn't be locked. But it is. You help me bring it down.
That's not necessary. I'd open it without a key. There you are.
How could you do that?
Oh, never mind, Olga. You'd better run along if you're going to.
Oh, yes, of course. Down these stairs and we are safe. What are you waiting for?
I'm not going with you, Olga.
Why not? Are you mad? If they catch you...
I'm very interested in seeing what will happen when they catch me. So get along with you, my dear. Step through the doorway and close it behind you like a good little girl.
But I don't understand.
It isn't necessary, Olga. Just step through that door.
Well, if that's the way you want it. They're coming. Goodbye, my friend.
Goodbye, Olga. Well, gentlemen, I've been expecting you.
Get him! Get him!
I haven't any gun.
Oh, yeah?
So, must you shine that torch into my eyes?
Oh, so sorry, Your Highness. Pokey, aren't you got no respect for your betting? Where do you get off shining a torch? It's a member of the aristocracy.
Sorry, Your Excellency. I shine him elsewhere.
Wait a minute. Shine your torch on that door again.
Well, you ain't got no gun. Oh, I can find this a change in a blooming pencil sharpener. It's a cinch. Aykroyd with no
penknife. A door.
No.
The curious carvings. The metal handle. It's the very same door I went through. The door from Mr. Mew's shop.
Oh, Lemmy, the bloke is off his chump. Here, you. What's he do with the gun, eh?
Gun? What?
Yeah.
Oh, the gun Aykroyd was shot with.
What in here do you think I've been talking about? Where is it?
Well, I gave it to the girl. Yes. And she's waiting for you to open that door so she can let you have it.
Oh, she is. Is she? Well, Ollie, supposing you open that there door. And if you get shot, well, we'll say a little prayer for you.
You really want me to open that door?
That's what I said, and hurry up about it.
Very well, then. I have a feeling I won't be seeing much of you after I step through, gentlemen. So I'll say goodbye.
No, 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 no.
Thank you. You've done me a great service. Hereafter, I'll take care to buy all my dreams from you and from no one else.
Beg pardon, sir.
Ah, yeah. And Dennis, is that you?
What, sir?
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to frighten you. How'd I get in the car?
I don't understand, sir.
I remember going through the door, and now I'm in the car. What happened in between?
Well, I'm sure I don't know, sir. You just asked me to stop the car, and that's all.
Did I say anything about seeing a mysterious antique shop with a curious sign in the window?
No, sir, never a word. You just tell me to stop the car, that's all you said, sir. Just tell me to stop the car. No antique shop round here, sir.
Yes, so there isn't. Well, you can start up again.
Very well, sir.
Open, Dennis.
Sir?
How long was it before I spoke to you after I asked you to stop the car?
Well, sir, you just said, stop a minute, Pendennis. Then you stared out the window with a funny look on your face for a second or two, and then you mumbled something which I didn't hear, sir. That's also helped me, sir.
Just a couple of seconds, eh? What was it Mr. Mew said about time?
I won't charge you any time at all, Mr. Castle. When you're through with the dream I offer you, you'll be in your car as it was 15 minutes ago.
I beg your pardon, sir, but... Well, is there anything wrong, sir?
Oh, no, I'm really quite all right, Pendennis. Now...
Oh, very good, sir. You had such a funny look on your face, sir,
Yes, Pendennis. I'm afraid I was dreaming. Or was it a dream? I wonder.
Look, sir. Someone having motor trouble up ahead.
What? Motor trouble? Oh. A woman, isn't it?
Oh, yes, sir. One of them foreign-looking females. Slinky type, sir. Shall we stop and give her a lift, sir?
No. Absolutely not. Drive right on, Pendennis.
Tonight, the second performance in its second version of The Ineffable Essence of Nothing, written and rewritten by Ranald R. MacDougall. Appearing in the cast were Ian Martin as Mr. Castle, Eric Dressler as Mr. Mew, Ian McAllister as Pendennis, Howard Smith, the bartender, Harry Neville as Aykroyd, Lotta Stavisky as Olga, and Kay Lee as Nellie. This has been a presentation of the National Broadcasting Company, RCA Building, Radio City, New York.